without that being played, we welcome you aboard another exciting week of the Andy and Amanda Show. And, you know what?
But until then, please look upon this house as your own.
And we'll see you next week. Oh, no.
Okay, let's go. All right, then. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Good night. How you doing,
Good
Peter?
Afternoon. Good morning, good evening, everybody, whatever time it is, wherever you are in the world. How you doing? I'm doing great, Amanda. How are you doing over there in the UK?
Yeah, I'm doing good, and I hope our listeners are doing good also. It's been a great weekend. Had some relaxing time yesterday, catching up after a very busy 2 weeks. How was your weekend?
I'm trying to think. What's today?
It's Monday.
I think it was pretty good. I guess if I don't remember much, I guess it must have been all right.
Oh.
You know? Nothing that's too exciting, actually.
Does it? As long as you enjoyed it, that's the main thing.
Working on some tunes. I'm trying to get another album done by the end of December. Hopefully it'll happen.
Oh,
you know,
fantastic.
Getting there. Got some dates next spring. Going out there with the guitar again and going to be doing some touring starting March.
That's incredible.
Hope to get... There's two albums out there already that were released during COVID, one live in Hawaii and one done with Chet Gardner, who's been on the show several times. He was in production and played some bass on the album. And that one's called Across 3,000 Miles. They both came out during COVID. That's kind of cool. And now I'm hoping to get another one out by the spring to back up and to provide some tour support. So
fantastic. That is great news.
Yeah, but you never know. You know, the way this show is going, which is well, we don't know where it's going. Anyway, the way this show is going, which is pretty darn impressive in terms of numbers and reach, I just might stay in California and do this in the hell with tours, you know. Get you old for this. Yeah.
Oh, bless you. That's amazing that, you know, you've got that ability to do that. I think that's so cool. You're very talented. Yeah. Uh-oh.
Well, thank you. As you were.
What? The heavy breather is back.
Oh, no.
Oh,
who's in line? Oh, he's just tuning in, I guess.
Goodness.
No, you're free to tune in, Darth. Yeah, whatever. Whatever floats your boat. You're welcome.
Is he on oxygen by any chance?
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Oh, I hope he's okay.
I hope so, too.
Dude.
That sounds good.
Mm. That's Cornell's joined us again.
Yeah, maybe. Is that you, Cornell?
Yeah, Cornell.
Where's Cornell? Oh, he got excited there for a minute. Listen.
Oh, yeah, look, the breathing changed. Calm yourself. It's okay. Look, breathe. In through the nose, out through the mouth.
Yes. Don't know.
Now.
I don't know.
He's full of shit.
Well, it works for me.
It worked for me. So anyway, what's going on over there? What's exciting?
Wow.
Anything at all?
All sorts. I mean, I don't know about exciting, but craziness. We got a lot of anti-vaccination protests that's been taking place around schools. Outside schools in the UK. Yeah, there's been a lot going on regarding that.
Miserable, mean, nasty fucking scumbags.
Oh. Oh. Okay. Calm yourself.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, so
I want to just tell everybody, you're free to join the show at 515-605-9888 or email us. Let us know you'll come on at andyandamandashow@gmail.com. Okay, I just wanted to get that out. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but go ahead. Yep.
So basically, schools have been told that COVID teams can vaccinate pupils against their parents' wishes. And this has caused uproar. I mean, parents have gone absolutely mad. They've taken legal proceedings and letters have been distributed to schools around the UK, basically with legal threat that, you know, something will be done if their child is vaccinated. the government guidelines are saying that children aged between 12 to 15 will be administered by school age immunization service. Teams that already carry out flu and human, oh my goodness, how do you pronounce this, Andy? Papillomavirus?
The what?
Papillomavirus.
Another one?
Papillomavirus, HPV, vaccinations in England. So, yeah, the role of schools will be limited to providing a site and distributing information and consent forms to pupils and parents. I'm reading this off the Guardian.com, their other UK paper and news source here. So, because the BBC are reporting, you know, they shared a video and showing the actual protest outside of schools. The Guardian gave a bit more information. So, yeah, they're basically saying that in cases where parents withhold consent, but the child wants to go ahead, the guidelines say the vaccination teams will determine if the child is able to make an informed decision known as GILIC competence and make every effort to contact a parent to check before they proceed. If a parent objects to their child being vaccinated, but the child wants to be vaccinated and is judged to be GILIC competent, the healthcare professional will try to reach agreement between the parent and child. However, the parent cannot overrule the decision of GILIC competent child. The guideline states, in that scenario, the child will be vaccinated. In cases where parents refuse consent and the child is not deemed to be GILIC competent or does not want to be vaccinated, the guidelines from the UK Health Security Agency say a vaccination will not be given. According to NHS, GILIC competence is when children under the age of 16 can consent to their own treatment if they are believed to have enough intelligence, competence and understanding to fully appreciate what's involved in their treatment. Wow. So yeah, that's a brief rundown. People can read further into that because it does go on to explain a lot more. That's another level of craziness to everything that's already going on in the UK right now, darling. You know, I mean, this COVID thing has been an issue anyway, but the anti-vaccination thing is just increasing and increasing, especially when it's come to children, because of course you had pregnant mothers who were refusing to have the vaccination. And now, of course, it's all aimed around school children. And I can understand the parents' anger of feeling like they're being forced into something. But at the end of the day, all those parents been vaccinated, have they held out with the vaccinations, or are they just concerned about their children? I don't know. I mean, that'd be interesting to find out and see if there's more to that. So, yeah, that's that. But we've also had the local budget, I say local, UK budget, that's been presented here in the UK. And so, you know, people have been angry over that as well because of price rises here in the UK and...
What is in the, are they angry that it's so high, or is it not being attentive enough in particular areas?
I think it's a bit of both, sweetheart. I've got in front of me, which I just bring up. Hang on, I saved all of this because this was reported at least 2 weeks ago. We've had so much going on the show. So the little bit of information is there's going to be a universal credit boost. Universal credit is something that you can get when you don't have a job and the government are providing you some sort of income to help you to survive.
Yeah, that's
and
like
stay
unemployment
alive.
Or welfare here in this country.
Yeah.
It's called universal credit. I like that name better, actually. Yeah. It doesn't sound like somebody's on welfare, unemployment, kind of, you know there's a stigma attached to that versus universal credit. Sounds like, okay, I'm getting credit from the government, help me out right now and until I get myself situated and landed into a better environment. That's I like that, you know, I'm telling you something.
Yeah.
You guys have it in many ways, a lot better than we do, but, you know, I continue. Yep.
Okay. So it says if you are working and also receiving universal credit, which is, you know, if you've got a very low income, then they can help you, obviously, then you are probably affected by what is officially known as a taper rate. That means the universal payment credit. What is it with me today? Payment you receive is reduced as you earn more. So for every pound earned, sometimes above a base level of earnings known as the work allowance, 63p is automatically deducted from your benefit payment. By reducing that to 55p, the Chancellor is allowing people to keep more of what they earn. By raising the work allowance, the same is true. And they're saying, obviously, depending on your circumstances, you could be better off or worse off. You've got the rising cost of living, so people have been targeting this as well. That it says there's plenty of evidence of prices going up in shops and on bills, with the cost of living expected to rise by 4% over the next year, according to official forecasters. There has been a freeze on fuel duty for more than a decade, and this will continue for at least another year as drivers are hit by higher prices at the pumps. About 60% of the price you pay for fuel is taxed, a mixture of fuel duty and VAT. However, there will be no measures to assist householders with rising domestic gas and electricity bills. As everybody knows, our energy prices have gone through the roof here. Minimum wages and pay packets, that's going up from £8.91 to £9.50. So that's a 6.6% raise. Alcohol, they're changing the way they tax alcohol. So basically, the higher percentage of how alcohol, the stronger it is, there will be more tax on it. So things like sparkling wine and draft beer, you know, some of the weaker drinks will be lower in tax, which is great. So it means it'll be cheaper to buy. Good night out. so, yeah, they're you know, planning on doing that, which I think is pretty good thing, considering they've been rising so much over the years.
Yes.
Cigarettes, I believe there's going to be a 7% rise in duty on hand rolling tobacco. And then you've got the tax bill that's going to be affected, and that will increase. Getting on a plane, the cost of domestic flight ticket could be cut, but very long haul flights could get more expensive. That is because the Chancellor has made changes to air passenger duty, a levy paid by airlines, but ultimately funded by passengers through the cost of their tickets. The cladding crisis. So many homeowners of high-rise flats have faced crippling costs owing to cladding crisis. After I don't know if you guys remember this. A couple of years ago, we had a great tragedy in London called the Grenfell Tower tragedy, where these building companies were meant to repair these building blocks to high standards, but the materials they used were not very good, and they were a fire risk. So anyway, a big fireplace, and the tower was completely destroyed. Many people died.
Oh, no.
Since then, you know, there's been back and forwards with legal action taken against councils here in the UK.
Whatever happened to the London bridges that were falling down?
Oh, they're still there, so they must have repaired them. You know?
Well, why, when we were kids, and we saw London bridges falling down, what the hell? What the hell?
Anyway. I know. they're going to be...
They feed you as a kid. You know, just, Yeah.
And one of the last things they mention is money lessons. So to help those youngest age, there's extra funding for projects supporting new parents. UK-wide program to improve numeracy skills. Oh, so individuals with poor numeracy face up to £1,600 a year in lost earnings, according to the charity National Numeracy. Wow. That's interesting. But yeah, there's a lot more to all of this. This is just like a basic rundown of the things that they wanted to highlight. So there's going to be a lot of changes. And like I said, everybody in the UK has been stressing over this energy thing. I've now noticed that Christmas stock here on shelves are literally selling out so quickly. These stores are getting them on the shelves and within days sold.
Good reaction to that one. Wow.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy. Wow. So everybody's panic buying, darling. You know, because we've been warned a couple of months ago, hey, Christmas is coming. We got a shortage of drivers. Goods are not coming into the country. We got a shortage on fuel. You know, energy prices are rising. We're screwed. Go out and panic buy. Of course, people are doing it, and it's silly.
You guys don't have – we have Thanksgiving coming up here. It's the next big holiday here at the end of November.
Yeah.
is to celebrate the arrival of America, of what would become Americans, and the execution of all the Indians that had this country before we got here. It celebrates that.
Yeah. Isn't that the last Thursday of November or something?
I mean, thinking about, you know, what they feed you in history here, you know, about the arrival of Americans and the friendship with the Indians, which we eventually slaughtered. You know, and you know what's interesting? You know, having, you know, been a dad watching kids grow up through first and second grade and going through little holiday plays and the reenactments and the cute little things they do and dressing up as pilgrims and the Indians and Christopher Columbus and all this stuff. And they don't really teach them the actual history. They learn about that through elective college courses when they're much older, about what actually happened then. How do we actually get here? Who are we as Americans, and how do we get this country?
Yeah.
And we were not, most of us, unless we're indigenous, we were not born here. We're immigrants, or we're descendants of immigrants. Every single person who lives in the United States of America, none of us are from here, again, except the American Indian. We took this country over, and we took this land. And you know, we have Thanksgiving and all these things, and I'm not criticizing our being here, but it just, you know, looking back at what we celebrate as opposed to, you know, teaching history. And there's been a lot of protest here because more and more millennials and folks are getting out of college now, learning about the, you know, the facts of our history and our ancestry. They're starting, these folks who are now, you know, becoming parents and so forth, are going to school boards and school districts and say, hey, I think we need to teach real history. Or the real, you know, my kids' biggest complaint growing up was they learned about history from every other nation in the world except America until they were way deep into high school.
Yeah.
And they used to come home from school in third and fourth grade and they're learning the history of Spain, the history of that country, history of this country. How about the history of America, Dad? How come we're not learning about our country? And I never really thought about it. And then I thought about my own elementary school education, you know, going way back. And maybe, you know, I guess you were in the school in the UK, obviously, you know, I thought about, you know, wow, Thanksgiving, Columbus Day, America, you know, and what we saw on Indians on TV and is, you know, shopping with bow and arrows, you know, running around TV town, you know.
Of course.
And that was our depiction of the American Indians, how they.
Yeah.
But wait, we were the invaders, not them.
Well,
and again, I'm not complaining, but that is our history. It is a fact.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And it needs to be acknowledged, and it needs to be taught, and early on.
Well, you know? As far as I'm aware, from what I've learned here, that the American Indians shouldn't really be called Indians because they're just the indigenous Native Americans. And
exactly, yes.
They got labeled Indians simply because of...
As a baseball team. They got labeled Indians as a result of the baseball team, the Cleveland Indians.
I think it was Christopher Columbus who was heading for India, and he was in search of keys. So he was aiming for India and then ended up in America and thought, I've landed in India. Saw these natives and like, oh, look, Indians. And since then, the name stuck.
Right.
So, you know, when I hear that, I think, oh, they must be so offended to be called Indians.
You know, it's something when you really think about it. And it's something that, you know, my kids were conscious of when they were in elementary school. I mean, they literally came home from school and asked, how come they're not learning about the history of where we live? How come we're learning? And as they went through tests, you know, as then become sixth grade, you know, they become acclimated to a higher level of education as they get out of the, you know, second, third grade, and you're not coloring and, you know, learning how to spell dog anymore. You know, they start learning history, and they, as they go into junior high school, you have dedicated history classes, dedicated English classes, and blah, blah, blah. You're not just in one classroom with a teacher anymore. And they'd come home with these tests. I remember them studying and helping them study for their history and quizzing them and stuff. But the tests weren't about American history. They were about the history of other countries.
Yeah.
How come we're not taught American history first and then explore the world?
Yes. I mean, there's so much, isn't there? There's quite a stigma when it comes to history being taught in schools, because there's obviously here in the UK, we get taught things about the war, the Holocaust, you know.
Are you taught about the Holocaust in school? Are you taught about the Holocaust?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not. See, we are not. We're
right.
not here.
Right, okay. Yeah, no, no, all that kind of thing has been covered. Yeah.
You know, it's really, you know, not, you just mentioned that. Of course, I'm Jewish, you know, and that means a lot to me. And but, you know, 11 million people killed by the Nazis, by Hitler, and 6 million of them were Jews, but there were 11 million people who were gassed or treated otherwise.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the fact of the matter is they were after the Jews. 6 million Jews were gassed. And,
absolutely, yeah.
You know, forced to dig their own graves, then shot, you know.
Yeah.
And so forth. And used as medical experiments, and the horrific list goes on and on and on. So when we talk
yeah.
about that in the Holocaust, I mean, of course, our you know, my kids, I'm not, as you know, religiously Jewish. I don't believe in a God, but I'm culturally very Jewish. You know, I'm culturally, regarding my attachment to the history of the Jewish people, I don't
yeah.
know a whole lot about it. I know what the synagogue in my life and blah, blah, blah. You know, we took our kids to what's called a secular synagogue where there's no rabbi. God wasn't really mentioned, but it was called the Children's Jewish Folk School. So it was
right.
all about the history of being Jewish, you know, from the cultural
yeah.
sense. And their
yeah.
bat mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs, which my kids elected not to do, were not religious, but rather almost like school book reports on various aspects of history or social justice or women, you know, feminist rights. And the only social issues is what these kids got up in front of an auditorium and spoke about like they were in college. You wouldn't believe it. It was unbelievable. My kids said, hey, if I'm going to do that, then I'm going to get school credit for it. I'm not doing the bat mitzvah. Fine. Good. I'm not forcing you to either.
I
wanted them to. But I did want them to. But they said no. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The kind of dad I am.
Aww.
And the kind of mom my wife is, you know, not just me.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
But it's interesting, the arrival of Native Americans in North America goes back to like 15,000 BC.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Oh, incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I've always felt some sort of connection with them, and I don't know why or what it is, but, you know, I love mm-hmm. how peaceful they are, what they do for their land and their people and everyone in general, because they're not an abusive race at all, and
mm-hmm.
they're some of the most amazing people you could ever meet. And, you know, I just love their whole, I don't know, way they live, their culture, you know. I mean, there's a huge amount I don't know about them. So for me to say, oh, yeah, I love everything about them would be very ignorant of me. I'm going to sit here and say that. But there's what I have heard and seen and, you know, been a witness of. I really do appreciate the type of people they are.
I know what you mean. I'm just really impressed to a high degree with your education system, what you and your fellow countrymen and women were taught, and what the subjects matter was decided upon in your early education. We talked about that, you know, things, little things here, little things there, you know, during this whole adventure together. And whenever you talk about your upbringing and your education and things that you learned and how, I'm like, man, you know, I mean, I'm a product of the education system here in this country, and it's a damn good one. Don't get me wrong. It's a very good one, the one I'm very proud of. But still, when I think about, you know, a child's mind is forming and the perceptions of the world are beginning to come together and how, and they're taught, you know, the arrival of Christopher Cross, in 1492. No, what am I saying? Christopher Cross is saying. Failing, take me away. That was Christopher Cross. I'm sorry. Who was this? Christopher Columbus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Christopher Columbus. I don't know.
Everybody thinks he was British, but he wasn't. He was European. He came from a different country. I'm trying to remember the name of the country now that he originated from.
Estonia?
Oh, it could be. He kind of swirled, like, whizzed around.
Transylvania?
Spun around like a Tasmanian devil. causing chaos in his wake. I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head. See, history was never my strong point at school. You know, back in the day when I was growing up, I had so much interest in creative arts and things like that. I was not very much an academic. I was more of a creative soul. So things like geography and history were never my strong points. I had no real interest in them. And it was only when I was starting to get older and appreciating so much more of what was going on in life and what happened in the past, I was like, wow, why didn't I like this at school? You know, back then I was too cool for it. And, you know, but it, over the years, you know, you picked up bits of information, you've seen things on TV and documentaries and things like that. And it's awesome to learn all these wonderful things where we as a species came from and the types of things we've experienced. And so, yeah, Christopher Columbus, although everybody thinks I should know more about him because they assume he's British through and through, he's actually European. And I think he spent a lot of time in the UK before, you know, doing business and things like that before heading off to other parts of the world to try and conquer business in that sense as well. So, yeah, I mean, I've got a big beef with the education system, though, Andy. I mean, there's a lot of history in this world that we're not taught in schools. Especially when it comes to black culture and things like that. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. And that, you know, they're talking about, well, that's another whole show, which we should probably do, in itself, talking about cancel culture and racial theory, whatever it's called. I don't even know. You know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know what all that's about, but I guess we should learn and talk about it because it is. Do you remember... what was I going to say?
I wish somebody would shut him the fuck up.
Well, wait, wait.
Oh, that's harsh. Come on, mate. Just try it. Jeez. Just try it.
Really?
I know. I mean, listen to me when I was trying to talk and speak about the news and I'm tripping over my words and pronouncing things wrong. I'm like, what's going on? It's okay. We're human. We make mistakes. This is a free-flowing show.
But it was, you know, it was the European colonization of America. I mean, that's, you know.
Yes.
So Columbus was from Spain.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah. So anyway, I remember that. I remember that history. I remember the history, and I also remember from being in Spain and all the plazas. I don't know if you were in Madrid, but Plaza de España, the big one, the Plaza de Columbus. You know, there's a lot of big Columbus memorials and statues there to celebrate.
Yeah.
You know, Columbus.
Yeah.
So when
and
you
that's
think
the
about
thing
the colonies,
as well. Yes, sorry. Go on, sweetheart. What was
you going to say? But when you think about, just from what I recall, that, you know, most of the colonies, they weren't called states back then. I remember playing George Washington in a second grade play. Oh, my God, it just came back to me. Anyway, the big play in front of me, it was the lead in this play, and they were like, wow, I remember that.
That's
anyway,
cute.
No, I had my white hair wig on and the three angle hat, you know, the whole George Washington outfit and thing. I remember some of my lines.
Really?
I remember my like this one. Only on the Andy and Amanda show. Oh no, no.
Boom boom. Love it. Very true.
But we're, you know, I guess most of the colonies, as they were called, not states, were formed after, like, what, you know, sometime after 1650 or 1600, somewhere in there, I recall.
Yeah.
But it was the first nation, when you think about it, just think about it for a second, the first nation whose most distant origins as to where we came from, well, you know, where we actually all immigrated from are fully recorded.
Yeah,
and that we know that we did not accept indigenous population, as you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We know we did not come from here, and we can all look at our roots and say, well, I'm Irish, I'm German, I'm Russian, Romanian, I'm whatever it is. Right. So
yeah.
So we are the very first nation when you think about it. Who actually recorded where we came to occupy the land that we have?
Yeah, I guess
And the first colonies were British colonies, right? Right. That's what the Revolutionary War was about.
They say that. Yes, they say that. But I guess if you really think about it, where the UK, Great Britain, has a lot of history. We also document that most of our settlers here, or the people in the UK, came from Europe. So we had people from like Rome, Greece, you know, all those countries, Spain, France, Germany, the list goes on. So we had to come over here and settle here in the UK. And that was hundreds of years ago, hundreds of years, thousands of years ago. So if they were coming from Europe, no one truly in the UK is British. So if the British went and colonized America and other countries, then, hey, we're all European at some point, you know? So no, it's the way I see things, apart from maybe places like Africa, but then I should imagine that has its mix as well of people from Europe. I don't know. I'm not very educated when it comes to Africa's history, unfortunately, and that's so sad to say. But we've got various countries in this world that have that mixture of European people. So who can truly say, I'm British, I'm American, I'm this, I'm that? We can't, because all of our ancestors came from all different places. So when we have these debates and arguments with each other about countries against countries, it's like, really? Have you checked your bloodline?
You know what, let me assist and think back. When you were when you were going to elementary school, I mean, way back, think, you know, what wasn't way back? I don't want to date you.
It feels way back, believe me.
What were you taught about the Revolutionary War and the separation of the United States? You remember, or how was that presented to you? That's kind of interesting. Oh, I've never asked that before to somebody from the UK.
Andy, I've got to try and remember this. Like I said, I had no real interest in history back then, so I was kind of just taking bits and pieces in. The way it was portrayed was that we literally just went over and colonized the US. You know, we were trying to do business there and trying to take over the land. I mean, no matter how you write it or make it sound pretty, the truth is the truth. That's what we did. So, you know, I think there wasn't any arrogance in the way it was presented to us as children of what happened. They just gave you the facts as they were. You know, this is what happened. This is what we did. I can't remember much, in all honesty, about any kind of conflict or anything that happened surrounding those circumstances. But I got to say that the way our history is presented here in the UK, there doesn't seem to be any kind of ism or, you know, any attack on other cultures. Even when they talked about Hitler in the war, everything was presented in the most respectful way. He wasn't seen or portrayed to us children as the devil in disguise or, you know, this barbaric man, but the circumstances were barbaric. So that's how we were taught about the situation. And of course you gain your own opinion. You see these tragic things that are being presented to you through video and slides and all that kind of stuff, and you think, oh my God, this happened? This world allowed this to happen? And you grow up as a kid thinking, oh my God. And so you build your own opinion on a monster of a man and, you know, the tragic circumstances. And unfortunately, no matter how you document things, sometimes they can be you can make somebody look really awful, or you can make somebody look like a hero. And I can't really compare it to your educational system. I mean, there's been conflicts online with Americans and the British arguing over the war, what happened in the war all those years ago. I'm like, come on now. Bang your heads together. Get a life.
I got to tell you, thanks to the former administration, there's been talk here. I mean, people are still carrying Confederate flags in the United States of America here in 2021. You remember the march on the Capitol building in January 6th and all the people carrying Confederate flags and having the President of the United States stand up and declare that that racists and white supremacists were very fine people. You know, and his vision, you know, we're going back into a civil war here with that administration.
Yes.
I mean, and that's a fact. I mean, that's not my conjecture. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. Mm. Miserable. But you're talking about, you know, people online having these discussions. And this is, it's interesting because the internet as a medium has just really opened up, you know, all these avenues for people to express who they are and how they feel. And a lot of that has to do with their foundation, with the environment they grew up in, how they were educated, what kind of parents they had. And you know, who are we? You know, when you're a baby, when you're just born, you know nothing until somebody tells you something. And somebody could tell you something, and it could be a lie, but you believe it because they told it to you. As a baby, you have zero. You have a blank slate ahead of you. There is nothing there. There's nothing there. Then people educate you, and however they educate you becomes the truth. right?
Yes.
And then not only when they educate you, but then when they educate you in the same class with others and all this, as we talked before, all this agreement is created, and that's how a lot of truths and stories, which aren't based on truth, become a reality. When we have a lot of agreement amongst a large population, that becomes the truth.
Yeah, this is very true.
And we can apply that to many things, to somebody telling a baby for the very first time that there's a God, from somebody telling a baby for the first time that cigarettes are bad for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it does get silly, and I understand that, you know, it is important to look back to see where we came from, what happened. But when there's legit arguments over something that's already been and gone, that has no valid presence in the here and now, it doesn't make a difference. You know, what's the point in just literally tearing each other apart over it? I mean, the Americans, no disrespect, I love you guys so much. They... From what I've witnessed online and what I've heard from other people with their interactions with American people regarding various subjects in our culture and our histories together, there's always been this kind of egoic battle going on with, you know, America being the biggest and best country in the whole world, and everybody should look up to them and, you know, see them as the best. And, you know, if you argue any different, then, you know, you're a waste of space, you're trash, you know, all this kind of thing. So when, you know, there's these battles going on talking about what happened in the war, about the Americans swooped in and saved the day, it's like, yeah, you'd all be dead now if it wasn't for the Americans. It's like, well, come on now. We fought literally 90% of that war without you, and then the Americans came in the last bit to help us get through that last hurdle, and yes, the war was won, and we're extremely grateful to you guys for helping us with that. But there's that whole arrogance, you know, from both sides. We're as guilty of it as people in the US. But there seems to be this whole egoic culture within the US that, you know, you must honor and wave that flag with pride. You get taught that from a very early age to, you know, look up to the flag and all this kind of thing. And we do have that aspect here in the UK, but it's nothing compared to what it is in the US. And I can see how much there's a huge divide in the US from over some of the things that are enforced. And I think Trump is a classic example of the ego side of the US. He represents
that
side.
That what we did brought it about.
You know, and there's people here, we're just as guilty of it. It's just we present it in a different way. We don't force it in people's faces. We're more of a reserved kind of, I don't know, people see us as quite snobby and, you know, up our own ass and smart asses because we're reserved and we have our opinion and it's quite sharp, it's to the point. Whereas, you know, in, you know, people in the US are very different in that sense. And so... That's where our cultures clash.
I've been to Europe several times, and only to the UK once, last November. No, November before last, what am I saying? 2 years ago. And I just loved, I just thought it was just the people and the whole environment, the experience of being in London was just exquisite. Absolutely loved it. And I was supposed to go back and do some music there and do a record at Abbey Road, and that all got postponed.
Yeah.
And hopefully it'll happen over the spring and summer. But anyway, I've always had since my first travels to Europe, just a tremendous amount of admiration for the culture and the people of the European continent, you know, of where you are, the whole continent from, you know. There's so much history there. There's so much ingrained history. It's like you folks have been there and done that, you know, and it's so deep. It's not necessarily what you learn in the classroom, it's just the culture that is manifested over a long period of time that is ingrained, I think, in a large part of the population.
Absolutely.
Here we are. We've been in this country just over 200 years, whatever it is, and we think, you guys have been there for thousands of years. You know, look at the history, look at the architecture, look at the buildings, it's amazing. It's amazing. It really is. And you know, I've heard, you know, I've seen so many people and heard so many conversations where if Trump had won in 2020, that there would have been a mass exodus. You guys would have been, you think we got immigration problems.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of an excess it would have been, but I know people that say we're moving up to Canada, or we're doing something, you know, moving, going to get a boat, going out to sea, or moving to Europe or Sweden. You know, education system in Sweden, Switzerland is supposed to be extraordinary, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, that didn't happen. Trump didn't win. We're kind of waiting to ship now, so to speak. Speaking of which, Joe Biden's soon to be signed $1 trillion infrastructure bill. Remember, we talked about that briefly on Friday. That was direly needed, man. A big political score, a big win, and a vindication of his entire creed, I think, of politics has happened. But it's on its own merit. It seems that, you know, because the election was just over, you know, a year ago, and it seems that right now about – let me shoot the numbers if I can find it quickly.
Drum roll, please.
Over the weekend. Do. 58% of Americans – say that President Joe Biden hasn't paid enough attention to the nation's most important problems, which most people look at as being the economy, but a lot of the issues with the economy have to do with recovery from the SARS virus, from COVID, you know, and people don't seem to, okay, you know, and we think about what this country did in terms of relief, you know, providing the country with checks in the mail, trying to, you know, help them through remember that, folks. And even when Trump was in office as well. More than a third of Americans think that the economy is the most pressing problem.
Right.
And among the group that sees it that way, 72% state that Biden hasn't been attentive to the right issues. And when you look at the so 30%, or actually it's like 20-some percent, who consider the coronavirus pandemic the nation's top problem. And it kind of is, you know. The economy is, you know, what's on our bank? You know, what can I afford to go out and eat? Can I go on a vacation? Can I go on a trip? Can I buy a bigger house? Can I do A, B, C, D, whatever it is? Whatever you want to kind of live better, you know, whatever. If we face the potential of death, or sickness, as a result of going outside and being with others, there's not going to be an economy. So it's a very small minority of people right now, according to polls. I don't know if this is true. All right, you know, take polls with a grain of salt, but let's just suppose it is true, just for the sake of it. 20% consider the coronavirus pandemic the nation's top problem.
Right.
So within that population, almost 80%, I think it's like 79 to be exact, but anyway, let's just say 80% in that subset say that Biden has had the right priorities. 21% of that 20%, right? 21% of that percent say that he did not have the right priorities. So what that really means is that, you know, you go over numbers and polls. What it really means is that Biden is not real popular right now. He's not as unpopular as Trump. I don't think we'll ever see those low numbers again, unless Trump gets back in office. I don't see that happening. But Biden is, you know, I think his heart is in there. You know, we talked about this, I think, in last week's shows. I forget which one. But Biden is he's stumbling right now. But I think this infrastructure bill is going to pave the way, hopefully, and you know, show some progress. And it's not just him. You know, he campaigned on building back America, you know, and bringing us back up to speed with some other parts of the world, you know, in terms of technology, in terms of, you know, the railroads and bridges and airports and, and the within the bill is the funding to build hundreds of thousands of electric car charging stations across the country.
Right.
Yay.
Yes.
Great. People go over some of the aspects. I actually had this whole thing, but we don't have time to go over it right now. But Wednesday I'll itemize what was on this bill, because it's pretty cool. It's very, very cool. I think we should just at least mention it. Do you know Tucker Carlson is the commentator on Fox News? I don't know if you know. He's a conservative buffoon.
Yes.
Right? I think we've played some sound clips from him in the past here and there. We try to avoid him. But he actually said that he, much like me, but he commented, huh? I didn't. I just played dumb. He never figured out what critical race theory actually is, despite talking about it for months.
Mm.
So imagine if I was poo-pooing critical race theory and talking about that, and I never really knew what it was, as opposed to me just saying on the show, like I did, you know, half hour ago, that I don't know what the hell it really is. But anyway, what is that they're teaching? Should they be teaching that? I don't know. What is it? You know, I don't know. But anyway, he said, yeah, you know, so he was poo-pooing it, talking about it for months, and he actually then came forth and admitted that he never really even knew what it was, even though he criticized it.
Right.
Amazing.
Okay.
Let's get down to more serious things. Remember Rod Jeremy? Ron Jeremy?
Yes.
The porn actor? Yeah.
Yes.
His indictment includes 30 sex assault counts.
Oh, my goodness.
He's in jail for $6.6 million since his arrest in June. The porn actor?
How can a porn actor have 30 sex assault counts? I mean, isn't he getting enough already?
you know, isn't that amazing?
Yes. I'm stunned by that.
Yeah.
As you can tell from my squeaky voice.
Yeah. That's why I mentioned it. And it's on our website. It's for the today's show. Actor Ron Jeremy indicted over 30 sex assault counts. Jeremy has been held in jail for $6.6 million since his arrest in June 2020.
Wow, that's crazy. I'm just stunned how a porn star who's having sex all the time then finds it in him to a sexually assault 30 people or 30 times.
Yeah, from ages 17 to 40 or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ron, anyway. Why are you playing out, dude? Come on now.
Isn't it weird? Isn't it crazy? Man, oh man.
That's just so bizarre. Wow, but I guess that's no different than a police officer, you know, going out and doing his thing and then, you know, attacking other people. No, it doesn't even fall into the same kind of example. No, ignore that, scrap that. I was trying to think.
That might leave in the minds of some of our viewers and listeners a connotation of which would be inaccurate.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dick.
I watched that movie last night, actually, based on a police officer who had this obsession with a younger girl. They got into a relationship. It's based on a true story.
Mm.
Only Mine, I think, is called. Mm. And I was like, oh my goodness, didn't realize it was a true story. And then, you know, they kind of like reenacting like the whole case, like speaking to a reporter and mm-hmm. actually telling the story as well at the same time. Very interesting, but that's you just reminded me of that. Anyway.
Unbelievable.
Not a bad movie.
On a positive note regarding the pandemic, the U.S. has lifted the travel ban, and it's opening doors to visitors now.
Yes.
And yes.
UK as well. Yes.
Yeah. Mexico, Canada, Europe. So passengers will be able to, you know, travelers will be able to be passengers and be tourists and make up long delayed trips to see family members and so forth. Also, that would include our friend Mark Lester, who played the part of Oliver, who said he'd like to come over here for Thanksgiving to see his family, his wife's family in Texas, and come to L.A., and hopefully we'll get together. Maybe you want to bring him on the show, have him come over. Let's do the show from here. I want to put that connection back together. He's a great guy. We talked about having him back on, and I want to get hold of him and make that happen. He's a you know, it's been months. We keep talking about having Mark back on the phone, on the show via phone versus or somehow internet connection. So last time he was on, he had a problem with his computer, I remember, and it was kind of tough. But
absolutely, yeah, we had that feedback issue, didn't we? But it was such a great interview.
We'll remedy that. And Mark Lester, for those of you who don't know, played the part of Oliver when he was 8 years old as a kid in the movie Oliver, and it's been a favorite of ours.
Oh, what a classic.
And yeah, we've talked about it a lot here on the show.
I'd love to watch that again.
So would I.
I really would. It's been so long, Andy. So long since I've seen it. I can't remember the last time I saw it. It's many, many, many years ago.
I have the VHS tape. I don't have a VHS player hooked up anymore.
Wow.
I have the VHS. I have the actual movie. Yeah, I have the movie, Oliver. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Oh yeah, I watched it. My oldest watched it many, many, many times when she was a toddler. She knew every line in the movie and would act it out. I used to play Mr. Bumble and walk her through my living room singing "One Boy, Boy for Sale."
Yeah.
And if I got it, God forbid, I get a line wrong.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's adorable. That's amazing. You know what?
As a matter of fact,
VHS.
You know a funny story?
Right.
Is,
yeah.
You know, I had explained, she thought that the, it was Karen, you know, all those kids were kids, and that was happening now. And I said, my God, no, this was filmed in 1968, and we're talking about, you know, 1997 or 8 or 9. I guess it must have been about 2000 or 2001 or 2, I guess. Was she that old? How old was she then? Anyway, earlier 2000s. But regardless, you know, I told her that, you know, these kids are older. They're dads now with kids that age. You know, they're all, you know, dads now. Like I have you. They have kids of their own. As a matter of fact, let's look up some names on the casting list. Let's see who's in that and Google them and see if we can find them. And then we actually, in doing that, we found Mark Lester. And I remember saying to him this on the show when he was like, wow, flattered. I remember sending him an email and he responded like the next day and said, yeah. how he was so flattered and to be remembered as something that happened, in his words, such a long time ago. And I remember telling him about that on the show too. And he was like, you know, yeah, I sent you an email and you emailed back when my daughter was just a toddler. And it was like, wow, my God, Mark Lester emailed us. Wow.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's such a wonderful feeling. It really
and
is.
And the fact that he took the time to do it, you know, I mean, that movie was adored by so many, you know.
Yeah.
By so many.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
What I was going to say to you is one of the things I have on VHS that I still have, it's in a box wrapped up very carefully in the attic, is Michael Jackson's Thriller music video. They made it like a movie,
my gosh.
Didn't they? Yes. I have that on VHS, and I've never got rid of it. I couldn't bring myself to let it go. It's just incredible. And whether it plays or not, I don't know whether it's deteriorated. I have no clue, but it was so freaking cool. And do you remember those toys they had? It's like a red plastic device, okay, that looks like binoculars. And you put them up to your eyes and you could put slides. You slot the slides in the top. And it's got like a little button on the side that you flick down and it scrolls through each picture on the slide. And they did them. They were huge over in the UK back in the 80s.
Oh, of course I remember them. Yeah. Of course I remember them. I remember having
Scooby-Doo slides.
I remember Michael Jackson's Thriller
slides. Oh, wow. You know, the scenes from Thriller when he changes into that kind of zombie-looking thing, even though those pictures used to scare the crap out of me, I couldn't help but look at them. I was just so drawn to that whole little movie music video thing. It was incredible. I wish I didn't get rid of that, actually. I think I did. That sucks.
I remember them. I remember them well.
Yeah.
God, bringing back all these memories of early childhood education and toys and movies. That makes it, man. You know,
love it.
It was a good world back then. And not that it isn't now, but
I know what you mean. There's more innocence in the world.
Yeah, you know, and you know, culture is what culture is, and people are exposed to what's out there. But the only thing I can say without demeaning it is we didn't have rap music. We didn't have, you know, just the things that are – there was no internet, of course, you know. And the world just seemed to be in a better place in many respects. Not that the internet is bad, so, you know, it just
– yeah.
It was
a
different world.
I think it did, but I think where we have the internet now, we're hearing about all the things that probably existed back then. It's just thrown in our faces now. Because we lived in our kind of our own bubble then, didn't we? Because we didn't have mobile phones intruding on our every moment. We didn't have the internet to hear about every bad thing that's going on in the world. We just have the news reports on TV that at a certain time every day that you would hear about, you know, certain things going on in your town or your city or your country, and that was it really. And then you had that glorious bubble back again. And it was beautiful. I miss those days. I really do miss that innocence. You know, it's just so chaotic now. Everything's faster moving. Everything's more intense. You know, it's more intrusive. It's hard trying to find peace amongst these current times. And I think it's so important that we do so.
Yeah, speaking of which, you know, even things like there was serial killers and people going and you know, and school shootings and all this. I mean, it just didn't happen. It just wasn't, you know. And just like recently, there was a serial killer in Missouri, Kansas. That was he was busted authorities on a federal weapons charge on Friday. This guy is 25 years old, and he killed several women. I think they may have been sex workers. I'm not really sure, but you know, it put everybody up in arms a little bit because you got this guy going around just killing women, you know, shooting them.
Yeah.
And one was a teenager. You know, one was a teen, and they found this guy, 25-year-old guy, and I don't know if he's been charged with anything yet, but they know that he had the gun that was used in the killings, and so they assume that was the guy. But, you know, you just didn't – things like that, and that's recent. I'm just bringing that up. But you just didn't have to the degree anyway. I don't know if you didn't have the – it just – we had other issues. You know, other problems, you know, but some of which we still have today, you know, but – you know, it's just a different world.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And you could argue, does everything that we're exposed to now fuel the very things that we, you know, we already had, but just intensifying everything? Are people's energies feeding off all this chaos and negativity in the world now that it's too much for people's minds and they're therefore committing more and more crimes and all these atrocious things that are going on in the world? Is that feeding into it somehow? I think that's an interesting, you know, thing to look at or question.
Yeah.
Because everything I've got was so much more intense. Yeah. Wow, yeah, Andy, we got like a minute, 40 seconds.
Whoa.
Incredible.
Man, we're just talking. You know, it's kind of funny. This time around, it's kind of, you know, we never know where this, and I guess at this point, whoever is listening, either listening live and not calling in, which is, I know we have people listening in, but most of the folks listening are, you know, this show's long done. It's not a live show anymore. Our live number, if you want to join us any Monday, Wednesday, or Friday from 3 p.m. to about 4, sometimes 4:30, by dialing 515-605-9888. You're welcome to join the show. It is a live show and then stream later as a podcast, but it is a live radio show on Blog Talk Radio, and we do welcome you to come aboard. We never know what we're going to talk about. It's not scripted. It's raw. It's unrehearsed. We talk about news. We have a lot of fun. We talk about sex a lot in relationships, which is all – no. And we talk about politics, and we talk about spirituality, and we have a lot of great guests on the show. My gosh, the guest list, and we have a lot of great guests coming up too in the near future.
Oh yes, that reminds me. Wednesday, we've got two guests coming on the show. We've got.
Go ahead and talk about that.
Pete,
who are they?
Postiglione, and we've got Val McAdoo coming on, talking about their new movie. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool. And then we also have the postponed appearance of Kevin Michaels with the top charting hit country song. Down in Georgia, Google that, you know, Spotify that tune. I can't get it out of my head. It's a great song. But yeah, I guess what a show. It's been kind of fun just talking about history and kids and growing up and education and a little bit of the news. And what a fun show this has been, man. It's always a great time getting together with you on here. And we're 8,000 miles away. We've never met. I'm doing this show now over 300 episodes into the Andy Amanda Show on Coast to Coast. And now that the show is actually officially over, I guess we need to say goodbye. We'll see you Wednesday, and you can have the honors of doing that.
Aw, thank you so much. So,
thank you, Andy. Yeah.
So on behalf of my amazing co-host, Andy Kimball in California, Hollywood, myself, Amanda Love here in the UK, thank you so much. And more importantly to our listeners for joining us and supporting us. We love you guys. Join us on Wednesday. It's going to be a lot of fun with our guests about that new movie we're going to be talking about. It's going to be great. You take care of yourselves. We love you, okay?
Yes, we'll see you, folks. Thanks for listening. And we're going to close out the show with a guitar demo I did for Taylor Guitars that was recorded, and it's kind of fun. It's a big splash on TikTok right now, and it's just Andy, it's just me, just having fun improvising the guitar, and I figured, why not close the show with that? I'll just a little quip of it, but here we go. We'll see you Wednesday, folks.
Fantastic. Bye.